Welcome inside the classroom. It's time for your weekly smart look at sports. A new era dawns. Yes, indeed, it's the first show of the second semester. Brand new studio as well. We've reimagined the studio that we just got for the first time last semester. You'll notice behind us, if you're watching on our live stream, that the banner that we used to tape to the wall is now on an easel.
Anna's name says Adam Nuzzo right now. I'm watching the live stream as we speak, so the... There we go.
Depending on your perspective, it's an upgrade or a downgrade. That's why I said depending on your perspective. I'm Jeff Brault. That's Dr. Keith Shirley, who runs the Marist College Center for Sports Communication. Anna Grizzula, some people call her Adam, and Mike Wallace are also hanging out in our studio. Other new things is we've moved them. We've moved our student producers off on our right to right in directly front of
us. That happened in an off week because we had to for an – I think there was a safety issue, something might have fallen on them, or a lighting issue, and so we had to move them there. And then we realized it was better because, A, we can look at them, and, B, it creates an environment that's more conducive to broadcasting, and, C, I think it really sets up nice for our live studio audience.
Which is no one.
No. We're going to do it. We're going to line some people up there. We got a blue screen
up there. What are you going to force them?
We have
what? What are we going to tie them to the floor?
There's a new president.
That's a fair point. That could be, if you think about it, it might not be the worst thing that citizens are forced to do.
That's right.
It could be worse.
That's right. Wait, go ahead and march with that nuclear bomb. All right, so by the way, let's just get this out of the way right now. As you can hear right now, I'm fighting a monster.
Oh, God, here we go.
I'm fighting a monstrous cold.
Here we go.
So I'm just going to say this right now. You know, the killer said it first. I got soul, but I'm not a soldier. But maybe I am a soldier.
No.
I am.
No.
I am fighting for you today, folks. Yesterday, and Anna can attest to this, I had lost my voice completely.
Oh, we were one day off.
And I'll tell you why, by the way. I lost it because I gave it all to Marist.
That would have been the best show we've ever done.
Because I had to go to the Knicks game Thursday night.
Had to go to the Knicks game. Guess what? He had a box.
I was in a luxury box.
Whoa, let's back this trolley up.
He would only go if he had a box.
He didn't have a box.
But it's semantics.
26 people said no to the ticket, and then somebody called Keith.
Not true. So I was there hanging out with the Mucky Mucks, and when you're doing that, you have to talk. So you gotta make the circuit. So I did that, and I was walking around talking to all these people, and I gave it all for, you know, this was a Marist event. I gave it all for that, and I really lost it. And you know, you make odd conversation, but I did not watch. I think I watched 3 minutes of the game.
We don't like sports. That makes sense.
Well, I would rather. I mean, my throat was killing me. I'd rather sit and watch the game at that point, and I couldn't because I was doing my job.
You know, I have a question for you, Keystrother. Ostensibly a self-sufficient man. What could happen in your life? What mild inconvenience could happen in your life where you would go, all right, this is a mild inconvenience, but I'm not going to complain about it?
I mean, so you're saying that I have to deal with something that bothers me and not let anyone else know about it?
Yeah, because realizing that no one else cares. Humans get colds. We've all had colds. I give you credit for showing up today.
I mean,
but we don't need the whole dog and pony show about it. Like, we get it. You're a little nasally.
No. I'm not a little nasally. That's it. You have completely marginalized my discomfort.
You have a cold.
No, that's the problem with this country.
You have a cold.
That is the problem with it. And I believe yesterday we heard. I think that the creed from the new president was Keith Strother first. I heard that right. So, look, this is it's important. And it's important now more than ever. I don't know what's going to happen to our health care.
You don't have a pre-existing condition. You have a cold.
So, this could be the end of me. It starts with a cold. Next thing you know, it's bronchitis, pneumonia. I don't even know what's after. I think after pneumonia is technically is death. And so, who knows? With all apologies to anyone who's suffering from pneumonia right now, you've got a good shot at it. I give you at least 50-50. But my point is, we don't know, so it's a dangerous time to be sick, and I'm fighting through it. I should be home being attended to by nurses, family members, and clergy, but instead, I'm here. I mean, you know, I'm doing my part. I understand there's hundreds and hundreds of thousands of people, probably millions across the country, that are marching right now for women's rights. I'm doing my part right now, too.
Which so, brings me back to the original question. What is the mild inconvenience you would suffer that you won't complain about publicly?
I mean, maybe if I'm like a little too hot or a little too cold, like the air.
No, my God. I don't know anybody who complains about temperature more than you do.
He's from the South, that's why.
That's right. I know my body's never adjusted to that.
It's like a pre-existing condition.
Yeah, but is Texas the South?
No, Texas is, no, it's right. Texas is not the South.
Right.
Texas is, it's kind of, well, literally.
Texas is Texas.
Texas is Texas, and it, not only is it its own country, has actually tried to become its own country again.
Mm-hmm.
And so it is not the South, but it's hot like the South.
Texas, we talked about this week, passing the baton to California in terms of state that wants to become its own country.
I think California's got a nice shot at it. And California also has, you know, it's got the, well, both of them, I suppose, have, to some regard, have the proximity. It's right on the edge of the country. It's hard for Iowa to become its own country. A, because they don't do anything. Although they eat well.
Corn.
Corn and beef.
Ethanol.
Corn and beef.
Ethanol. Right?
Fried butter. These things got county fairs. These things come from Iowa.
Well, Iowa's got, I'm sorry, but it would be hard because Iowa's right in the middle of the country. So it's hard to have your, you know, that. But California, Texas, on the edges of the country, they could really do their own thing. Texas might as well, they could just become part of Central America. No big deal.
Downside to California becoming its own nation, might not be above sea level in too many more years.
They would lose some coastland. They would lose the edges of that. It is what it is, you know. You know, I made the argument earlier this week when I was writing about San Diego leaving, the Chargers leaving San Diego, moving up to Los Angeles. Is that the first person you've ever heard of that willingly has left San Diego that did not have to?
Yes, it might be. And Los Angeles is awful. It's an awful, awful place.
I think we're on agreement. Los Angeles is one of the worst American cities. I understand they have all these great things. It's not New York good. Like, New York has all this great stuff, and it's a great place. Los Angeles has all this great stuff, and it's awful. It's awful.
Los Angeles isn't even, it's not a city in the way you think of a city like New York.
Yeah.
It's just a giant suburb. It's one big sprawling suburb, and the small section that they have with the skyscrapers and it feels like a city, what they call downtown L.A., there's nobody there.
No, it's terrible. It's a terrible place.
What do you mean?
No, Los Angeles is not good.
Yeah, Los Angeles
is
not
good. We'll save you from yourself.
Don't go.
No.
If your friends are ever like, well, let's go to California, let's go to Los Angeles, be like, no.
You go to Northern California.
I've heard
San Francisco or San Diego.
Yeah. Now, you can go to, like, if you're in the L.A. area, you can end up at one of the beach areas, like an Irvine.
Sure, Santa Barbara.
Yeah, that's fine. Laguna Beach.
Good to know.
That's your favorite show.
Great show. So you can do that. But you don't want to be in Los Angeles. The traffic, there's no public transit. You know, there's nothing that L.A. has that New York City doesn't have.
True.
Other than a little sunshine. So no one willingly leaves San Diego, except for the Chargers. The Chargers willingly left and are now playing in the StubHub Center. 30,000-seat soccer stadium.
That's going to be really interesting to watch.
I hope they leave the soccer lines on so you can see them while they're playing.
Like a small college football game.
Yes. I hope they make them keep the soccer lines and be like, oh, I'm in the box. Like, I hope they make it look like that.
Well, you know, and they got in trouble for that logo.
It was a bad logo.
It was a bad logo.
Now, is it a bad logo because they copied?
It just wasn't a good logo.
I mean, it wasn't.
It was very well received by the Tampa Bay Lightning Twitter team.
Yeah,
You know what they should have done? They should have talked to our good friends here in the Hudson Valley, my logo girl.
You have a logo girl?
I know her name, but you don't.
No,
I love how you...
I tried to set that up.
You don't know who it is.
I forget. It's the cold. It's starting to eat through my brain. Oh, my God.
No.
What's her name? She's the greatest logo person. It's Nancy.
No, it's not Nancy.
Her last name starts with an A.
It does. That's true.
And it's Full Deck Design.
That's also true.
I'm giving a little pimp there. And she does a great work. She designed the Center for Sportscom logo. She did a great job. Was very patient.
First name starts with an M.
An M?
M.
Are you sure?
I'm 100% positive.
Is it Margaret?
Nope.
Miranda.
Is it Mary?
Mary?
No.
Don't help me.
Oh, I'm not helping you. I'm just seeing if I can guess this woman's name before you can.
A great classroom segment. Guys, write this down. Classroom hangman. It's actually a great idea.
I think we would just need to get a big whiteboard. Works great on radio.
Yeah.
I'll just be here. Blank A, blank, blank, blank. Blank A, R, blank, blank.
You've got a leg. That's a great radio segment. It's not Mary. It's not Margaret.
It's Molly.
Oh, I knew that.
You did not know that. We just proved that. You didn't know that.
No, I did know that. Molly, also a great, I'm not, there's no offense to Molly. It's a great pet name, by the way.
Okay.
It's true.
I like, and we've talked about this, I've never had a pet.
But L.A. should have, Los Angeles Chargers should have talked to our good friend Molly.
That would have been smart.
At Full Deck Design, she would have done a better job.
That would have been smart. I prefer for pet names, old-timey names. Like, I want to name my pet a name that was popular.
Like Ethel?
Wait,
yes,
no.
Yes, like Ethel.
Jeff,
Ethel would be a great
I'm the
pet
same.
Name.
Like, I want to name my dog Lucy or, like, Charlotte. Like, an old...
All right,
like,
well, Charlotte's not old-timey. If anything, Charlotte's in, like, the top five. That's coming back. Well, that's a hugely popular
Lucy,
name.
Lucy, I think, has come back, too, hasn't it?
Really?
Probably.
Well, I'm not getting that confused with Ruby.
Ruby, that's another one
oh,
that's
Ruby
come back.
Ruby would be a good yeah. one.
But I like, you know, I want my pet to have the same name as people's grandparents.
Like Aster.
Aster.
Well, that's
Astrid.
Max, ooh, that's why Max is so
Astrid.
Popular.
Max, sure.
Max is very popular.
Jack.
Well, Jack is a
I mean, it's
timeless.
Still current, yes, but Jack's believe timeless. Me, there's a lot of Jacks from back in the day.
Well, I like to go, I don't say I like to, but when I'm at a
Amos.
When I go to cemetery, what? I like to see the generational names.
Sure.
I like to walk through.
I'm sorry, wait. When I'm at a cemetery?
Well, you know, you go. You do have to go every now and then to a cemetery.
And then you take the tour?
Well, if I'm there, I'm going to do the roundhouse. I'm going to you're like, let's check out the 1920s. That's interesting.
You are an odd duck.
I like to see it all. I want to see like what the names were, what the popular names were of that time period.
Why don't we tell the people what's coming on our sports radio program this morning, shall we?
Absolutely.
The unnecessary freak out of the week is over the NBA All-Star vote.
Why is that unnecessary?
Because it's an All-Star game.
They disrespected his manhood.
Who, Russell Westbrook?
Yes.
So people are freaking out about the All-Star snubs.
That's right.
Russell Westbrook, who's averaging a triple-double, only player since
Oscar Robertson
never do it.
That's right.
He's not an All-Star starter, and everybody's pulling their hair out. They're like, how could this be? Oh, my God. This is the worst problem facing America.
Why do you have to marginalize everything? So far, you've marginalized a serious problem for the NBA. You've marginalized...
A serious problem?
You've marginalized an illness that I've had.
And you have a cold!
You have completely... unless it's a nuclear holocaust, apparently does not deserve our time.
It's an exhibition game!
It's very important to the players. It means something to them. Russell Westbrook could not tell his kids... that in 2017 he was an all-star starter. That's something he's going to have to look
oh,
at.
Heavens. Heavens to Betsy. I didn't look at it that way.
And by the way, there are generations of children now who will believe, who will not be able to be told that if you work hard, you can achieve anything. Russell Westbrook worked his tail off, worked his tushy off to get a triple-double this season. And what was he told? You're not good enough.
Actually, he was told you're equally as good as Steph Curry and James Harden, but we've decided in a tie-breaking format, and therefore you finish third.
I'm just telling you, that's what he was told. You're not good enough.
Maybe he should have worked a little harder.
How does he tell that to his kids? How is that an America I can believe in?
Yeah, you don't believe in an America of hard work. That is not something you believe in. You do not believe in process over results.
Oh, I know. I believe that we should all be rewarded for our efforts.
But you believe you should be rewarded regardless of your efforts.
I believe that I should always be rewarded. Yes. I believe that there's some people that, while we're all equal, some are more equal than others. That's a good way
you
to go.
You ripped that from Animal Farm. Sure. I mean, ripped it from Animal
That's
Farm.
Right.
Just verbatim. Right.
All animals are equal, but some are more equal than others. Right. You are Napoleon the pig.
Right now, I'm deciding, so I have two drinks. For those of you not watching the live stream, I have two drinks. I got an iced coffee, and I got a hot tea. The hot tea's for the throat. The lemon's good for the throat, as is the honey. Really, the lemon.
So we're going to fight about the NBA All-Star vote, the new process, which I actually like. I think the process worked. I like the process. I'm a fan of it.
All right,
I also am not the kind of person who freaks out over who starts an exhibition game and who comes off the bench.
Well, you don't care about anything. So we're going to bring on our good friend Bobby Marks, former assistant GM of the Nets and current Yahoo insider for the NBA, who's going to come in and give us his perspective. And what I really want to talk about with Bobby is kind of how players feel about other players. Like, what's that general? Because is this done over, by favoritism? Do they see things that we don't see? Is there kind of a reward system that goes on? I'd love to know, though. And do they actually really care? Is this kind of a joke to them?
We're going
to
talk about that, and just prepare yourself now. I am hijacking the second half of the interview, and we're talking about the Sixers. We're trusting the process. Come on, break up the Sixers, baby. Joel Embiid. It's time.
We can bring on Rob King, another alumni who's working with the Sixers right now.
I like it. Right, we are going to – I mean, you got to feel like the Sixers are on a collision course with the Cleveland Cavaliers in the first round of the playoffs. It's coming. Mm-hmm. It's coming, baby.
Oh, God.
It is coming.
Ben Simmons, get ready.
It is coming.
I trust it. Oh, I trust the process. I trust it so good. Second hour of the classroom. Sportsmanship?
Yeah.
Marist College in the MAC. In the MAC, you might have seen this week.
Ooh,
on sports.
My dad told me about. I'm so sorry I interrupted.
I mean, it could not have been a worse time to interrupt.
So Anna's dad does.
Anna's dad told us about this, and we decided it'd be a great idea.
Anna's dad works for Siena, does the radio broadcast for the Siena men's basketball team.
Basketball player for Siena.
Siena played Ryder this week. Ryder is a very chippy game. There were some flagrant fouls, a fight, some ejections.
And you know, Siena's got a chippy coach.
And Ryder, too.
Oh, really?
Yes. Both.
Who's their coach?
Kevin Baggett. Yeah. You, it meant nothing to you. I could have said any name, and you'd be like, okay.
No, no, I'm not going to pretend. I'm not one of those guys who pretends to know what they're like. Sometimes you tell people, like, oh, okay, and I have never heard of that guy.
No, nor should you have. People that, if you don't work in MAC basketball or are somehow intimately involved with mid-major basketball, you probably shouldn't know that. If you do, it's probably because you're like a degenerate gambler or something.
I've never heard that guy before.
Anyway, he told his team late in the game, don't shake hands afterwards. He didn't want there to be an altercation in the handshake line. Nobody told Jimmy Patsos this, so when Siena won the game, he's the Siena head coach, they lined up, and he did the air handshakes. He shook hands with air. No one was there.
Jimmy Patsos likes the drama.
Oh, yes.
Jimmy Patsos, same guy that did, decided to cover Steph Curry when he was at Davidson by putting the entire team on.
No, he played a triangle of two, but put both on Steph Curry. Yes. Steph Curry didn't score. He stood in the corner the whole game, and then Davidson played 5-on-4, beat Loyola by like 40 points.
Right. So he proved that he could keep Steph Curry from scoring at the cost of the game.
And we're now still talking about that. We are now still talking about a Loyola-Davidson game from 10 years ago.
A significant moment in sports history.
Man knows how to keep himself relevant. I will go on record as saying, I think the handshake at the end of college basketball games, and I'm going to piss off every hockey fan in the world here, at the end of hockey games, is unnecessary.
Okay.
I think it's stupid. Right. We don't need to do it. So I'm fine with what Kevin Baggett
did. That's fine. So you're just the saltiest. Why don't you?
It's not about saltiness.
You're just you're the angriest.
No, it's not about anger either. It's about not forcing people to do things.
We'll all just go sit and be mean to each other.
If you want to be. Here's the thing. I'd rather you be true to yourself and just walk away than shake my hand and not mean it.
So you think that there should be no kind of emphasis on sportsmanship?
Not at the highest levels.
I think it shows that at the end of the day.
By the way, that's not the highest levels.
Yes, I consider NCAA Division I basketball one of the highest levels of basketball you can play in the world.
I think it shows that at the end of the day, even if you hate each other, you can still get up there.
That's right.
And you know what? You don't have to like the people, but you can respectfully shake their hands.
Sure, you can. I'm not saying you ban handshakes. If you want to shake
hands,
Mike Wallace, what happens at the end of every major world soccer game?
They just kind of walk off. They go over to the fans and applaud them.
Yeah, but what else happens?
I don't know. They shake hands.
Yes, they do. But nobody forces them to. They do it on their own because they're grown. They're grown adults.
Well, these are not grown adults.
Yes, technically they are.
Right. Trade jerseys?
They do trade jerseys. Yeah. Trading jerseys.
I'm a big fan of the jersey
the
trade.
No, me
jersey.
Too.
We did that a lot in track. We would have a lot of the British teams come over, and we'd do these exhibitions, and we would trade a lot of jerseys.
Track, huh? Well, that kind of ruins it.
We trade swim caps.
You would... That's ridiculous.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Yeah, but track is completely
normal.
Let
me tell you what. You would do anything for my Birmingham, England track singlet right now.
No.
Anything.
That is untrue.
I could fill up the rest of the show naming things that I would rather do.
All right, we got to go. Bobby Marks is on the phone.
Yeah, we're also talking about Johnny Manziel. He claims he got himself sober through no professional help. Just said,
you could do that.
I quit drinking. I believe you. And now he wants to be back in the NFL?
Part 16.
He wants to be back. He doesn't say he wants to be back. He wants to be a good guy.
He wants another chance in the NFL.
He wants to be a good guy.
He just got hashtag lost in the sauce.
That's right, lost in the sauce, which sounds delicious.
Yeah.
Sounds like the best barbecue restaurant ever.
Okay. All right. Someone in the control room, trademark that. Lost in the sauce.
It's absolutely
way past us.
Lost in the sauce. We're going to open the classroom. We're going to open a restaurant called Lost in the Sauce.
A barbecue
And here's what it is. No, it's not going to just be a barbecue. You can get... Remember we had this with anything in a helmet? This is our new restaurant idea. We have all these different kinds of food products and then all different kinds of sauces. So you're like, I'll take chicken and I'll take that sauce. I'll have pasta, all that sauce. I'll have, you know, tofu, all that sauce. You can have anything. Anything. Any kind. We have like all these different food products and all these different sauces. You can mix and match.
So it's like any restaurant ever.
Yeah, but you get lost in it.
No, but it's lost in the sauce. Like, it's all about the sauce. You're like, I'll have chicken. And you know what? I'll go with the Asian sauce. I'll have chicken. I'll go with an Italian sauce. Like, it's just food and sauce.
Talking about the NBA All-Star vote. sportsmanship at the highest levels of sport. Will Johnny Manziel get another crack at the NFL? Plus, we'll have grades of the week and a whole lot more fun ahead. Stay tuned. We're back after this. Class is in session on Fox 12 20 97.3 ESPN Radio.
That's a great idea. That's a great idea. Honestly, you'll get much lower. So you're always better off.
That's fair.
As with every all-star voting process in the history of the planet, this one has led to some controversy. Here are your all-star starters, by the way. In the East, I really want to make Keith Strudler say this name, but I won't. Giannis Antetokounmpo?
Yeah.
Wow.
Giannis.
He's a foreign-born.
He is. You probably don't know a country. There's no way you know.
Estonia?
No.
Oh, God.
Give me the name again.
Giannis?
Yeah.
Antetokounmpo.
Well, that's got to be Greek.
It is Greek.
Yep, there you go.
All right. They call him the Greek freak.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. DeMar DeRozan, LeBron James, no surprise, Kyrie Irving, and Jimmy Butler. The West.
Just the Warriors.
Where the majority of the controversy lies. Steph Curry, Kevin Durant, Anthony Davis, Kawhi Leonard, and James Harden. As we talked about at the top of the program, Russell Westbrook, who's averaging a triple-double, is noticeably absent. Westbrook, Curry, and Harden all essentially tied in the voting process. It went to tiebreaker, which was fan vote.
I don't understand how it can be tied if it's so the rank order.
They were each weighted 2.0. The lower score, the better. And on the fan vote tiebreaker, Curry and Harden got more fan vote than Russell Westbrook, so they're in.
Right, but this had to have been normalized to a certain. Otherwise, there's no way they're.
What do I look like, a mathematician?
Well, as an aggregate vote. There's no way it could be tied. It had to be normalized. So I'd love to know the actual.
It's about the rank you came in.
That's exactly right. Yeah. That's how they normalized. Which is a terrible way to do it, by the way.
Well, luckily, it's an all-star game. It's an exhibition. Keith Strudler, why are people up in arms about this?
Because, look, I think for the most part, they normally aren't. And I think to some degree, I've always agreed that it's good to let the fans have a strong say in this. It's their game, right? And if you want to say that they're the ones that should get to decide. They're the ones who watch it. That's fine. I think there's a little more controversy this time because the players had a strong kind of strong place in this, and they're the ones that potentially denied Westbrook what I think many people deem to be his rightful spot in the starting lineup. There's that. So I think they don't like the fact that they feel like, and to use a common phrase right now, that this election may have been stolen. Potentially. Well, I actually heard the Kremlin was involved.
Well, Russell Westbrook received more vote from NBA players and media members than Steph Curry, but Steph Curry overwhelmingly in the fan vote.
Yeah.
And that's what got him.
Yeah. So, there you go. So maybe the outrage is more with amongst the media potentially anyway, but I think it's just that his numbers are so historic.
Yeah.
His numbers are so historic. I think it's hard to make sense out of this. It's hard to take seriously. Well, these are actually the best. In baseball, you have a weird system where every team's got to get in. So everyone understands it's not the best players, right? We understand it's a representative group. That's not what the NBA is supposed to be. It's supposed to be, you know, the guys that are actually best on the court. Although in past years, you've had guys that have no business being in the All-Star game. Kobe Bryant's been voted in when he's basically not playing.
But that's part of what the All-Star games are for. They're for victory laps like that.
But it comes in the middle of the season, so it doesn't feel like a victory lap.
Well, it's a chance for the fans to salute. Celebrate.
Maybe they should call it something different. Maybe they should just call it the MTV All-Star Game. I mean, because that's what it feels like a little bit, where they're just picking their favorite players as opposed to the best players.
That's what it is. I don't want to break it to you, but that's what these things are.
That's why people are mad.
Why do you think so many people want Zaza Pachulia to be in?
For the same reason that they wanted John Scott in the NHL.
That's exactly right. John Scott. Was basically
player.
A minor
John
leaguer.
Not a real
he was
player.
Basically a minor
not a real
leaguer.
Player.
That's a made up name, John Scott.
John Scott's more famous than you.
John Scott's like there's a million John Scotts in the world.
Go
this
Google.
One particular one.
Can't trust anyone.
This one particular John Scott.
Let's bring on our guest, who is probably the most overqualified person in the world to be joining us in this segment. Bobby Marks, a Marist alum, 20-year veteran of NBA front offices, and currently the front office insider for Yahoo Sports, The Vertical, returning to the classroom this morning. Bobby, how you doing?
I'm good. How are you guys?
We're doing all right.
All right. I'm a little sick, Bobby.
Oh, gosh.
I got a cold. Thank you for asking, though.
It must be that Poughkeepsie weather, you know?
Yeah. It's gorgeous here today. It's 50 degrees.
It is nice.
I'm playing golf after this.
Oh, no, you're not.
I sure am.
That's ridiculous. It's going to be wet.
I don't care.
All right.
I'll play off a parking lot if I have to. It's January.
That's fine.
Bobby, so you're tied into the league all levels. People are sort of up in arms about this all-star voting thing. I mean, there's been a lot more back and forth about who should start, who shouldn't start, than you would think people would care about for basically a exhibition game. How do people in the league feel about the all-star process? I mean, do they care about who gets voted in or out?
Well, I mean, I think if you look at Westbrook, and you made a good point, his numbers are off the chart right now, and I think that's why him not getting voted in kind of has highlighted the process here. But he got voted number one by the players and number one by the media. I think that's a pretty nice accomplishment right there. And that goes the same with Isaiah Thomas up in Boston. And you know, I think the outrage would have been if Joel Embiid would have made it over Jimmy Butler, or if Zaza Pachulia would have made it over you know, Anthony Davis or Kawhi Leonard, and Dwayne Wade would have made it over DeMar DeRozan. I think everything kind of leveled itself off. But I understand the outrage with Westbrook. But, I mean, it is an all-star game, and Westbrook will get voted in by the coaches here.
Oh, no doubt he'll be in the game. And so will...
That would be a slight.
That would be a bit of a slight, yeah, if they left him off entirely.
Well, that would be a snub.
But, I mean, you know what? You talk about Joel Embiid over Jimmy Butler. Statistically, obviously, Jimmy Butler, the right choice. But in terms of entertainment, would you rather not have Joel Embiid in there? Same thing. In terms of entertainment, is it not somehow better if Zaza Pachulia is in and not Kawhi Leonard? Nobody's making the argument that Pachulia is a better player than Kawhi Leonard. At least I hope no one's making that argument. But these things are supposed to be fun. And isn't there something fun about the fans coming together to put a Zaza Pachulia into the game? Do people take these things too seriously?
I think they do. And I think, you know, when you look at how the voting was last year and how it is this year, I wouldn't have had a problem at all if we would have just left the fan voting as is. And now we've incorporated the media and the players. And I think when you look at the voting, I mean, where people didn't take it serious was the players. I mean, for some of the players that got voted in who had never even stepped on the court. I mean, you had a Chris Middleton who plays for the Bucks, got, you know, a bunch of votes, and he's been injured all year. And Bryce Johnson, who plays in the Clippers, is a rookie, got a couple votes. And Mo Williams, who's been traded multiple times. So I think if you're going to examine something, you look at it deep, is how serious did the actual players take this?
And how much do the players like being voted as all-star starters for the ego validation? I mean, these are multimillionaires.
Couldn't there be marketing value as well? I mean, if you're an all-star starter, doesn't that help you sell shoes a little bit more?
And that's the question. How much does it matter to the players?
Well, I think getting in, it matters. And I know we had Isaiah Thomas from the Celtics on the podcast this week, and you know, and he made it very clear that it mattered from a starting standpoint. That was basically the next step for him. But I think, you know, if you can get into the All-Star game, if it's voted or selected by the coaches and you're on that stage come that Sunday, I think that's a pretty good standard right there. You know, most of these guys, I don't think any of these guys had any bonuses in their contracts where, from an incentive standpoint, you know, their pay was going to go, you know, an increase of $1 million or $2 million here, maybe like an NFL or MLB player. So I don't think there's a financial gain from that angle.
Fun fact, as I just need to solve a quick problem here, for both our listeners who might be curious, and especially for the interns in our control room, our guest last
check
name
your spelling.
Is,
learn how to spell.
Is spelled...
I know, I said it wrong because
Marks,
I wasn't thinking.
M-A-R-K-S.
I'm not paying you to be as stupid as I am.
Sorry about that, Bobby. We're live streaming this show. There's graphics involved. And let's just say that they may have spelled your last name in the most unflattering way possible.
Dr. Strudler said to change it to the second thing that was also wrong.
I wasn't thinking when I said it. I don't know why I said C. I just said it because it's just crazy stuff's coming out of my mouth right now. But let's all agree he's not in any way related to Karl Marx. Can we all agree on that?
Yeah, well, do we know that for sure?
Bobby, any relation to the well-known socialist Karl Marx?
That is not correct.
Right. So, I mean, I assume that. Bobby, is there any lobbying going on behind the scenes between players? Like, is LeBron going like, hey, I want you to vote for this guy? Is Steph saying, you know, vote for me? Does any of that happen behind closed doors? Or do they even have like an intermediary going, hey, I want you to vote for my buddy. Wouldn't it be cool if? Does that stuff happen?
No, it doesn't. I think the lobbying that goes on is more for the coaches when they're selecting the reserves. I think you have coaches calling the other coaches to kind of put in a good word for their own. You know, it'll be interesting as far as what the coaches do. In the past, there's been some coaches that haven't voted for probably the guys that deserve it based on their own player trying to get in, and you think you can maybe balance the scale a little bit on the vote standpoint. So I think from a lobbying standpoint, it's more about the head coaches when it comes to the reserves that are picked.
What about the other way, the popularity contest of it, especially with the players and the media? I mean, if there's a guy that, you know, it doesn't have a lot of friends in the league or might be viewed as a dirty player. You know, Draymond Green was pretty high in the fan vote, pretty low in the player vote. Andre Iguodala, sort of the same thing. Does that stuff come into play?
Well, I mean, I think the fan vote, we saw it at a different level this year, where we've had other celebrities from other sports, you know, kind of pushing the vote. You've had with, you know, Pachulia, you had basically a country, you know, kind of get his number from really high, but I don't think from a player standpoint, it should be that you're picking for the best player, not for if you have an agenda against a Draymond Green or if you think he plays dirty or if it's a Kevin Durant because you feel spited that he went and signed in Golden State.
Now, do you think that Russell Westbrook, now that he has been disrespected?
Oh, yes. I'm sure he's had trouble sleeping.
Well, do you think either he will take it upon himself to go after the MVP award at the All-Star game just to prove a point? Do they take it that seriously? Or do you even think that the other players might help set him up a little bit? I know that goes back to Tom Chambers when they wanted to make sure that he won the MVP
award. I'll be honest. I think it's going to be a defensive game this year. I think we played in the 80s.
If the All-Star game mirrors the regular season, I don't think we're going to see much defense played.
The Knicks scored like 120 points the other night.
The Nets dropped 140 yesterday.
Right, yeah, we love it. We love the new world of the NBA. It looks like Loyola Marymount. It's great. But do you think...
It's like Big 12 football, right?
Exactly.
We're getting shootouts here.
You know, do you think that Westbrook will take it upon himself now to kind of make a point and, you know, kind of prove a point to everyone?
Well, it'd be interesting how many minutes he'll play. I mean, that always dictates as far as from a head coach, as far as, you know, how long he's on the court. I don't know. I mean, I think Russell's he's a different character. I mean, he really is. He is, more to himself. He's got a close inner circle. We saw it with him returning or staying in Oklahoma City. I think the Pachulia incident the other night in Golden State, it certainly bothers him more than not getting into the All-Star game, or if he has a certain thing to prove when we get into the into mid-February here.
Well, I want to follow up with that. The Kevin Durant, Russell Westbrook not talking thing, is that, I mean, look, from an outsider, it's kind of fun. Is that real, or is some of that almost WWE fabricated drama? Like, I think in some ways it's great for the league. I don't know. As a former assistant GM, you probably don't agree because it's stuff you don't need to deal with. But is that real? Is this kind of animos actually real, or is that just kind of playing around?
No. This is real. This isn't, you know, made up or scripted stuff here. I mean, you've got a player in Westbrook, and I think a lot of us probably in that organization in Oklahoma City did not like how the Durant thing played out, at least from a communication level where how it was communicated to his former teammates, and now you have a player like Durant who you just lost to a team in Golden State in seven games when you're up 3-1, and you can probably make the point that the doing of that 3-1 lead was at Durant's feet to join a team that's a superpower. So I think, you know, there's certainly some animosity. I think eventually you get over it. But for right now, the wounds are still fresh.
I'll be honest. As a basketball fan, I love angry Russell Westbrook. Angry Westbrook is one of the best players on the planet. Now, happy Westbrook is one of the best players on the planet. But when you give him that little extra edge.
You like angry Westbrook.
It's fun to watch.
He is, yeah. He is good. He's,
You know what? He's kind of like a villain, but a villain whose cause you sort of believe in.
He's almost the anti-hero.
A little bit.
He's the anti-hero. He's Machiavellian. He uses nefarious means to achieve a noble cause. right? Is that a good way to put it? In some ways. He's fighting the good fight, right? He's fighting the good fight.
Yeah, he's like the, you know, all his friends left him. He's left all by his lonesome.
Bobby, do you like the New World Order of the NBA where guys team up and you know, create super groups? Like, everyone's now like, God, like the Traveling Willoughbys. It's a super group.
Well, I mean, I think that was, I mean, that's a one-year thing last year. I don't see that happening again. I think we're, you know, you get this new collective bargaining agreement that was just signed, and we're going to get a new set of rules. And the teams that made a lot of bad decisions when, you know, the money was so high last year are going to pay the price down the road. And, you know, the new rules are now incentivize players just from a monetary standpoint to remain with their own team. And if you want to go play in a winning situation, it's going to come at the risk of, you know, losing $70-80 million here. So, but I don't like, you know, going back to your point, I don't. I mean, no offense. I mean, I don't even think Golden State is watchable right now, to tell you the truth. And I know it's a fun team and you've got all-stars, but when you, even in a game like last night against Houston, when you're beating the team that's 32-11 by 20, 25 points, unless it's a close game in the fourth quarter, that Warrior team is not, for a non-biased person, is not very entertaining.
Yeah, it's not good for fans, unless you're a fan of the Warriors and just want to see them win every game. It's absolutely true.
Yeah, I can't watch it.
Let's talk about the biggest story, probably in NBA history. Break up the Sixers, baby.
Not on the rundown. Not on the rundown.
Bobby, can we all officially trust the process now? Is the process worthy of trust?
Well, it's funny because, you know, I think we all have short memory of that. Yet you had to live through those 3 years of terrible basketball.
Oh, and I lived through them.
One of the greatest I quit letters in the history of
an 18-page screed. I love that now he's like hanging out in Silicon Valley cafes, just taking meetings with tech guys.
He's great.
And that will certainly probably set Sam up for the future. Yeah, I mean, I think where this Sixer team is that, you know, I don't know how many general managers would have a stomach to sit through that for 3+ years in a building, a cold building in Philadelphia, and have such an inferior product. And, you know, we never thought, I mean, we thought Embiid would be back. We probably didn't think at this level here. And you know, we haven't even seen Simmons yet. And now you've got two possibly lottery picks with your own and that Laker pick for the future. And I think it's, if you're going to give credit, it's almost both. I think it's for Sam, for his vision that probably not many people would want to go through. And then you give it to Brian Colangelo, who kind of came in and inherited this group, but also put, you know, the Ilya Sova trade. You got NBA players around. You know, that your current group, Gerald Henderson, I know they're role players, but, you know, we got past the days of the Hollis Thompson and, you know, claiming guys off waivers and D-League players to fill out the roster, where now at least you have some NBA-level talent here.
They got a real shot to get into the playoffs.
I'll tell you, our good friend Rob King, a graduate of Marist College Center for Sports Communication, just put on Facebook 3 words. He works for the Sixers. Trust the process.
Trust the process.
You know, Rob King got a lot of television time last night after that game. I think I see him more on TV than I see some of these sideline anchors. Yeah. You know, that he's the first person to scoop up whoever is the star of the game for their post game media here.
Yeah, I taught him well. He learned from the best. There's no such thing as too much exposure
for yourself.
That's right.
Bobby Marks, front office insider for Yahoo Sports, The Vertical, joining us in the classroom this morning. Thanks for coming on.
Thanks, guys. Have a good day.
We'll see you this semester for sure. We want you up here.
I will be up there. You're going to have to prime me from Southwest Florida down here. I don't go up to weather that's below 60 degrees.
All right. We'll spray some more aerosol cans, make that happen for you.
Thanks, guys.
All right. Bye-bye.
We got to take a break here in the classroom. We're back after this. Fox 12 20 97.3 ESPN Radio.
This is, I think, for the first time.
It's not my fault.
It's not our fault. Yes. I feel like we're just... I feel
I'm so happy.
We're going to cut and replay it over and over and over again.
Do I have to ask you if you want the belt or the wrench at this point?
Goodwill Hunting?
Yeah.
I would always take the wrench. It doesn't seem like a good choice. Why would you take the wrench? Because screw him, that's why. It's a great scene.
It's an unbelievable scene.
I love that movie. It's such a good movie.
Jeff.
Yes.
It's not your fault.
Thank you. I got to go see about a girl.
It's not your fault.
Well, you just jumped to the end.
Yeah, I did. To be fair, the wrench and bell thing's pretty far to the end too.
Did I tell you that I think this is this past week, I ended up staying up till like midnight, 1 in the morning watching Armageddon.
the movie.
Sure. Oh, absolutely.
That came on the other day.
Yeah.
And I was fascinated.
It's a great movie.
It is one of the worst movies ever.
No, it's a good movie.
No, it's one of the worst.
It's a great, terrible movie.
Thank you.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
I will say this. I don't know that there's ever been anyone in the history of humankind that's flipped to Armageddon on television or on HBO or whatever and ever flipped away from it. It's one of those movies, once you're in, you're in. You're like, they are literally going to land on an asteroid and explode it with a nuclear bomb.
Do you remember?
There's a bunch of oil riggers in space.
You're like, this is actually.
They couldn't train anybody else.
This is a plot that got approved. Like, this script made it through.
Do you remember the other asteroid movie that came out at the same time, starring President Morgan Freeman, Deep Impact?
Were there two asteroid movies at the same time?
Two asteroid movies at the same time. And the other one was Deep Impact.
I worry about asteroids hitting the planet.
As well you should.
Now,
it's a serious fear.
It's interesting. It's
killed
interesting.
The dinosaurs.
Well, it's interesting. That's right. That's right. And the dinosaurs were, you know, considerable. I mean, they were larger than we are. That you would think they'd have more fortitude than us. I mean, with the common cold.
Sure.
The common cold, though, did kill off in War of the Worlds, the aliens. Now, I'm fighting that same fight that literally took down the aliens that threatened the Earth. Like,
how,
that's the fight
I'm
going
through.
How noble of you. That's the fight I'm going through right now.
You're so brave.
That's the fight I'm going through. That is the reward of millions of years of habitation on this planet, is we have become immune to these deadly viruses that I'm fighting off right now.
We know Strother's camera doesn't work. Can we make sure his microphone doesn't work either? Is that a thing we can do?
I've been working on that since I started working.
I'm hoping that we're trying to get someone from our media center on the phone so we can get our live stream back up for the second hour.
Yeah, so here's what's not working.
Right.
Live stream.
Well,
graphics.
No, graphics are working.
Well, here's the thing
about
the live
audio
stream.
No, we spelled every name wrong.
It's only one name.
That's been every
wrong
name.
Twice. It was
the thing about the live stream, it does work. We are feeding a picture and it's just a camera on Jeff. There's no sound,
I mean, let's be honest. Hello, everyone. I expect big ratings.
We have a guest.
Here's a problem.
If we could get the name of our guest before the show starts, we could definitely start spelling these names correctly.
So that's Oliver, the guy who's in charge of the Chiron.
Now we're about to do some internal business.
Here's what I think a problem
now
is.
Now we're about to have a...
How to run a radio show, 101.
Now problem. We're about to have a staff meeting.
Problem number one.
What?
Oliver is not wearing sleeves.
Never.
Never.
Hard to take him seriously.
You can never trust a man... with exposed shoulders.
Why not? Suns out, guns out.
No, those people are not worthy of trust. If you have exposed shoulders, you do not project an air of competency.
Say that to David Hasselhoff.
I will.
No, that's good.
I will.
Yeah. When he's mobilizing the efforts to save the beach, you're not going to tell him he does not deserve your respect. You are going to get in line and listen to orders. That guy from that beach chair, they literally saved the planet. Multiple times. My favorite scene on that Baywatch. My favorite scene on Baywatch was I didn't watch it that often, but when one of these guys was like decided he was going to start training for the Olympics again. Like, there's one guy, I guess he was. Like, I mean, they're all good swimmers, but he's like, I'm going to start training for the Olympics again. So the other lifeguard who I guess was serving as a coach was like, all right, here's your training day. Go swim to Catalina Island. It was just like not get in the pool. Like, there's like an island out there, and they're like. He's like, I'm going to swim to it. Like, that's Michael Phelps. Like, that's how he does it. He's like, I'm just going to go swim to that island.
It's like Rocky IV.
Yes,
Dr.
Shredder,
I have some great news for you.
Yes, Mike Wallace.
They're making a Baywatch movie.
It's coming out
May 26th.
Starring The Rock.
And Zac Efron.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, Zac Efron, I like.
True.
Yeah.
Interesting. But so I watched Armageddon the other night, and I'm amazed at how mediocre and ridiculous it was, yet I still... would watch it again tomorrow.
Mm-hmm. And it's such a good cast. Like, all those actors are fantastic.
It's truly in the cheesiest roles. But they've really, literally, I mean, it is the classic Band of Misfits.
Bruce Willis, Ben Affleck, Liv Tyler, Steve Buscemi.
But is that not that group they set up there?
What's the point?
Band of Misfits.
Yeah, they're oil riggers.
I mean, they could barely get themselves to the training camp, and next thing you know, they're up in space, saving the world.
Unbelievable.
Saving the planet.
Unbelievable.
My favorite scene
is... willing through space rock.
My favorite scene is when the two space shuttles take off at the same time. I'm like, there has to be some turbulence. Like, they don't even let you do that with airplanes. And then these two space shuttles just taking off.
No time to waste.
And I also like the Russian cosmonaut who's up there on the space station, who is punch drunk. Hey, don't touch that.
You're going to really need to learn how to do a better Russian accent these next 4 years.
Don't touch that.
You just sound drunk.
Well, it's what he sounded like, a drunk Russian. That's what he was like. That was the whole. That was literally the whole scene. He got up there and he was.
I'd like to officially apologize to our new comrades.
I'm saying that was how he was. He was put up like in the movie. They were like he was a Russian cosmonaut, and you expected him to be really on the ball. And they were like, oh, he's been up there 18 months. He might be a little loopy. Like no one's checked on him in 18 months. He's manning the space station, and they're like, no one's talked to him. Like he's on an island. Why would you be on the space station if you're not going to have constant communication with the Earth?
I don't.
It made no sense that he's just.
That's what made no sense about the movie Armageddon.
Well, the idea of them landing on an asteroid with two spaceships
and then drilling into that asteroid, depositing a nuclear bomb, and blowing that asteroid up.
Well, you know what? It had to be 800 feet though. It had to be 800.
And
feet.
They landed on a gosh darn metal plate. Talk about a kick in the teeth, huh?
One of my favorite lines when he's like, "We've never seen any rocks like this before," and I'm like, "Well, it's an asteroid.
You're in space.
Of course, you.
It
haven't.
Is not of this earth.
We've never seen any rock like this before. So, but they saved the world. Look, we're here today because of them.
Bruce Willis. All gave some. Bruce Willis gave all.
You knew that was going to happen.
Of course.
When they went out. I'll take him down.
Right. Oh, and he kicks Ben Affleck back in the elevator?
Well, you knew that was going to happen. And Ben Affleck's crying and screaming. Everyone's got to die. Might as well die saving the world. Right? Could you, now, serious question, could you, if you're holding a nuclear bomb, could you set it off?
I don't know.
Yes. I want to say yes.
I don't think I could do it.
Well, no surprise there. You're not heroic.
I'm with Steve Buscemi at the end. Wasn't that who it was? Wasn't that like where he's like, "Look, I'm going down with the whole ship. We'll all go down together." You know, just let it happen by sheer will. I don't think I could explode the nuclear bomb.
Well, it's a good thing Bruce Willis is on that asteroid, not Keith Schroeder.
But I don't think I could do it. I think at the end I'd be like, I can't do it. Like I couldn't give myself a shot.
Like you know you're gonna die anyway.
Yeah, but then I can't do
it. No, Keith Schroeder's not—he's not magnanimous like that. He would be like, honestly, if I have to die, so should everyone else.
I think I could wait for my death. That's like one of my biggest fears. Well,
isn't that the worst part of it?
No, well, if you detonate the nuke, you're pretty instant. I would imagine.
If I'm like the whole jumping off of something really, really high up, like you literally have to think about dying the whole way.
All right, enough of that.
Totally detonate it.
You would detonate.
Go quickly. I want to go quickly.
It's
got to
be a painless way of death, right?
It's not painless.
It's instant.
It's not
it's
painless.
Instant,
it
is
instant.
Though. It's like a flash, and then you're gone.
How is it painless?
You
explode.
It's instant.
Yeah, but it's instant. Exactly. You're not going to feel that.
You're going to feel the first, like, 0.5 seconds of pain.
I'll remember that.
You literally won't.
No. Science says you won't.
I don't know. I don't think I could do it.
I'll remember that.
In terms of ways to die, directly next to a nuclear bomb is a decent way.
I couldn't do it.
The worst way you could have got you could go from a nuclear bomb is like you just get caught in the fallout.
Yes, I agree with that. Yes. Any sort of slow process.
The slow death is the worst part.
Say,
the instant death seems
oddly
like
oddly enough, I feel like this is a relevant conversation now.
Yeah, so.
Yeah,
it's not completely without context.
Your worst ways are buried alive.
Oh, buried alive's the worst.
Drowning.
That's like CSI.
Right. These are bad.
Oh, no.
There's been a CSI where they're buried alive.
Yep, and the ants started to get him. It was Nick. I remember that one.
Absolutely. That's the worst. Buried alive is terrible.
CSI
that's
lost.
Why I feel. I awful. I was, you know, it's the avalanches. Oh, that's awful.
Yes. Really. Although, I think, do you see in Italy, the people that are like buried in a hotel?
Better than in a...
Right. It's like the best case scenario of a bad scenario.
I don't know. Pompeii seemed pretty bad.
Like we might as well drain the fridge now while we're here. no reason to save any of the steaks.
They're not going
to
charge us for the mini bar, I bet.
Can Anna stop eating this? End of the world version.
We got another hour of the classroom coming up after this. We're talking about forced sportsmanship, and if Johnny Manziel's got another crack at the NFL, stay tuned. Fox 12, 2097.3 ESPN Radio. Sports communication Mike Wallace, who has gone somewhere else.
We don't know where he went.
Well, I told him to go check on the live stream.
Oh, it's not working, FYI. Anna Grizulis also hanging out.
Yeah, but I'm actually trying to make it, work.
I know you are, but it's going to be too little too late. There are problems beyond our capabilities happening right now.
To me, there's nothing that's beyond our capabilities. I don't believe that.
It's not true. It's not true. There are many things beyond our capabilities. Doing two consistent hours of excellent radio, not something we can achieve.
I'm telling you, look, Bruce Willis landed a space shuttle on an asteroid and saved the world. If he can do that.
In Hollywood.
No. No, in space.
But well, Bruce Willis is an alpha male. Keith Strudler has a cold and spends all day complaining about it.
Okay, now I know today is a women's day, but can I just say there is this whole thing about how men are really, really bad when they're sick?
They are. Awful. Yeah. Awful. Yes.
Men are?
Yes,
men,
I agree
They say
with that.
Men are a lot less tough than women when it comes to sickness.
Because it hurts more.
What makes you say that?
I want some scientific evidence behind that. I'm not going to dispute you right now. It's not important.
I made that up. Completely made that
well,
up.
Well, there it is.
By the way, Bruce Willis did not save the country of France.
What do you mean? Just,
what?
It's part of the planet.
Yeah, no, one of the smaller asteroids hit Paris.
Oh, that's true. Yeah. Mm, that was true. A real scene.
Fact check.
You know,
yeah. C'est dommage.
Well, that's unfortunate, too.
I mean, for all the heroism, he was a little late.
Yeah, you're right. You know what?
Yeah.
And what's the Earth? It's not worth living without. Well, we'll never see France again.
No, we'll never see France again.
Might as well be Mars now. That wall goes up. Can't put a wall around like an ocean front, though.
It's tougher. Tougher.
Apparently you can around Mexico.
Well,
so
it's not
we'll
ocean
see.
Front.
Part of it is.
We're not going to box that. We're not putting a wall around Mexico. That would seem really, really uncool. We extended the whole wall.
Because I'm sure we're not going to do any stupid things.
By the way, how about we got El Chapo? We've talked about El Chapo on the show
before.
El Chapo here in Brooklyn now.
He's in New York.
He's in Brooklyn.
Yep.
How about that? Brooklyn is the coolest borough.
You're going to make him grow a handlebar mustache.
I think he already has one.
Well, you know, what I heard is he's going to be in a few years, he's going to move up to Beacon. Actually, he might because there's a big prison.
There's a correctional facility right there. Yeah.
Oh, my gosh. I forgot about that.
Just like the rest of the Brooklynites. So I'll go up to the Hudson Valley soon.
One of my favorite videos is anything involving Jimmy Patsos. But this week, Jimmy Patsos did the air handshakes. You've seen him. Mm-hmm. Jimmy Patsos, head coach of Siena College men's basketball. He was and his team were taking on Ryder this week. And a very, very chippy game. Flagrant fouls, ejections, a fight late in the second half. And with a few seconds left in a game in which Ryder was going to lose, it was decided down the stretch. Kevin Baggett, head coach of the Bronx, calls his team over and says, listen, after the game, walk off. Don't shake hands.
Now, was that you've seen this. You obviously follow Mac basketball more than I do.
Yep.
Was that done with the intent of showing them up a little bit?
No, it was done with the intent of if there's a handshake line, they might fight. It was done with the intention of...
You don't think he could have just said to his players, look, guys, keep it calm.
I think he could have said that. I think the way he chose to go was get off the court.
You don't think there was a little bit of we'll show them?
I don't know. I know that the answer that he gave when asked about it was he told his team to get off the court because he felt like there would be a fight in the handshake.
Does he have a history?
Yeah.
A lot of these MAC coaches are fiery.
Oh, yeah. It's a fiery league.
Well, I mean, I saw...
Siena coaches and Fran McCaffrey.
Fran
was great. Though.
I don't see Fran as the guy that's going to start a fight.
I
do.
Yes, he is that guy. He's done it.
He's exactly that
guy.
Oh, yeah.
And
McCaffrey has also pulled his team off the court without shaking hands.
Now, I will also say, coach down at Iona, pretty fiery.
Tim Kloos,
mm-hmm. pretty fiery, and coach of Manhattan,
Steve Mazziello.
Will ride an official the entire game.
Yes.
And
do it while wearing Gucci loafers.
Well, he bought those when he thought he was getting the South Florida job. He took the advance, spent it. But so there are a lot of fiery coaches, and some of that is probably just the nature of the area. It's New York. You've got a lot of New York guys. I think there's a certain personality that comes along. Not that different than the Big East was when it was. You know, there's a lot of ego and personality. It's also a lot of proximity. I mean, these schools know each other. You know, for all of the talk of professionals, of college conferences like Duke and North Carolina, they're so close. The MAC schools are almost all close to each other.
Yes.
I mean, we know each other
well. Part of what I like about MAC basketball is, and this is true for many mid-major conferences, you're getting one bid. It's a one-bid league. So these regular season conference games mean more than a regular season ACC game. Because here's the thing. Duke and North Carolina, they're both in the tournament. You know, sure, only one gets to hang an ACC championship banner, and they want to win, and they want to play for that. And yes, absolutely. But in the MAC, regular season finish, you're seeding in the tournament, an easier path to the dance. This stuff matters more.
And I think it also matters for recruiting.
Sure.
So you bring it. Look, if you're Iona and you beat Manhattan both times, that's a feather in your cap and something you can sell to your recruits going down the line.
So Kevin Baggett pulls his team off the floor. They don't shake hands. Jimmy Patsos didn't know this was happening. Goes through the handshake line, shaking air hands. So that allowed this video to go viral. And it was everywhere. And it started this discussion of sportsmanship. Was Kevin Baggett a bad sport for pulling his team off the court? Was Jimmy Patsos a bad sport for exaggerating it in the way that he exaggerated it? Was it an okay decision that Kevin Baggett made to, in his words, try to prevent an on-court fight after a game that included a fight? Flagrant fouls, was very chippy.
How did the refs do? And I didn't watch the game. How were the refs in keeping control of the game?
I mean, you know, they did what they could. They ejected players. They assessed flagrant fouls. Like, they did what they could. But at the end of the day, you can only do so much.
Was there a history between these two teams coming in?
I don't believe so.
Because I don't. That doesn't
nothing right. that I remember.
No, I don't. That doesn't. Certainly, it's not a historic rivalry. But there's nothing that I and they haven't been the top two teams in the conference recently. I don't know.
Nobody likes Ryder and the Mac. I'm just going
to
say it.
To be fair.
Nobody really likes Ryder.
Is that a swimming thing or is that just you?
No, I thought it was just a swimming thing. And then I spoke.
We hate those Ryder swimmers.
Two people. Oh.
All right, enough.
I'm just saying, not a lot of teams in the MAC like Ryder.
To be fair, not a lot of teams like Siena.
Well, Siena.
Another good point.
But Siena was the big dog on the block. And I think there was that. No one likes the team that's kind of beating up on everyone else. No. And it had a little ego about it, too. And they had some institutional advantages. They were paying their
coaches. There was a fight,
more.
Too. I mean, didn't some players get suspended for a game? I believe that Wright and the Ryder player got suspended.
There are some Ryder players who will not play tonight against Marist because of what they did in the Siena game.
We need it. Is Ryder any good?
Yay!
Yeah, they're pretty good. They're not top tier, but they're good.
They're good.
Above 500.
Maybe we'll beat them tonight.
It's possible. Anything is possible.
Anything is possible. So the question is whether this was handled well on any end. But you have a larger question, right?
I do, in a sense. I am perfectly okay with what Kevin Baggett did.
Why?
Because I don't think there should be a forced handshake at the end of games. I don't think there should be forced sportsmanship.
No, but
sportsmanship at a certain level, and I consider the NCAA a high enough level. Sportsmanship at that point should be a personal choice. It should not be forced.
But
if you want to be an a-hole... If you want to be a jerk, okay.
They got the video up. I like that we have the video working.
The one time nobody can see the audio. There's Jimmy Patsos giving his air handshake.
So
it's really funny. I mean, he is such a personality.
He is awesome. I love Jimmy Patsos.
He is crazy.
Kudos, by the way, to our staff for making this work. I love the fact, though, that we only make this work the time when our live stream's not working.
Right. The time when no one can enjoy it. But it's a good dry run for the future.
Yeah. So... Look, there's a couple things with that. We can get into this larger issue about sportsmanship. But I do think, look, there are rules and there's protocols. And I do think once you start to ignore those protocols, you have chaos.
Okay, so it's not a rule, the post-game handshake.
It's certainly a norm.
Yes.
It's a norm.
Yes.
Just, you know, there's been a lot of talk about breaking norms.
Yes.
All right. I don't like the idea that coaches take it upon themselves to change the norms midstream. That is a norm that's been long established in the history of college basketball, right? I don't know how many years that's been kind of processed.
Long while. As long as I've been alive.
Exactly. So they always shake hands after they... And by the way, that's something that's taught starting in youth basketball, right? Once you're six, you go to youth basketball and you line up and you shake hands. And that's just something that happens. Whether or not we can get into whether or not that actually promotes good sportsmanship, I don't know. But I don't like the idea that a coach then decides to go renegade at the end of the game and say, guys, we're not doing this. Like, I don't agree with that. I think if a coach wants to go into the post game and go on a rant and rave in a press conference, that's fine. That's his protocol. He put his players in the middle of it. And I don't think that's the right thing for – he took his gripe and made it a larger issue.
Look, you can take or leave Kevin Baggett, the Riders coach. But you can take or leave – his statement that he did it because he thought there would be a fight if they came together at the end of the game.
If
you don't believe that, that's
I don't
fine.
Believe
you
it.
Cannot believe that.
And by the way, if that were the case, then it was his responsibility to call a timeout with 30 seconds left in the game, to go over to the ref and to go over to Patsos and say, guys, it's It's been a rough game. We're going to do a handshake. You talk to your guys. I talk to my guys. By the way, the ref probably should have done that, too. And that's why I asked about the refs. Refs, number one control job of the ref is to control the game. I understand they got to call the foul. They got to control the game. So someone with 30 seconds left should have said, you, get over here. I don't want to see any fireworks when this game's over. We're going to walk it through, and if I see anything, you're all sitting for the next month.
Or just walk away. Why is that not, you know, just walk away?
Because there is a, if you, look, this is my theory on a lot of things. If you don't like the rules or the laws, change the rules or the laws. You can't just start breaking them.
Isn't a rule or a law?
It's a norm, which is the same thing.
No, it's not the same thing. It's significantly different.
But in that...
We've had things that have been normal for years change because people decide it's not good anymore.
And you know what?
People evolve.
People evolve, but though, when you change a norm that is established practice as it's been... Look, this is. We're not meaning to be political. There is the potential that we may move a White House press corps out of the White House.
Mm-hmm.
That's not a law. It's a
no,
norm.
No, it's not.
But it's not good. You don't just do that. Right, there are repercussions. It's not good.
But there are other examples you can point to throughout history where the exact opposite is true, where the norm has been bad and the change is better.
That may be true, but better in my case, better is not having your players not shake hands. And that's a separate argument. I don't think though you change that norm midstream at the end of a game.
I am not under any circumstances saying that players should not engage in active sportsmanship. I am saying that players should not be forced to engage in acts of sportsmanship. I don't see anything wrong with the game ends and the players, like they do in every NFL game ever played, seek each other out. I have no do it. Great. I don't believe that you should have to force a guy. Maybe there's one guy on the team who's got a problem with one guy on the other team and everybody else is cool and those two players start something. And then what happens? I don't believe you need to force these players at this level where the games matter, where winning is priority number one. Winning is priority number one in Division I basketball. I'm sorry, it is. I don't see the value in forcing them to shake hands. These are adults. They are playing a serious competition, often against people they don't like. I don't see the value in forcing them afterwards to shake hands because it makes people feel better.
I understand that you believe, and I don't disagree with you, that winning is the number one priority of most people involved in Division I athletics. That doesn't mean that you don't have to adhere to some kind of standard of grace. And I think it is not too much to ask an athlete. And I look, this is not saying that they should be forced to do things. I think they should also be paid or whatever it is at the highest level. And by the way, that's why this isn't the highest level. They're not generating revenue.
Oh, it's not the highest level. Right. It's one of the highest levels.
So at this point, at this juncture that they're playing at, they're still getting a pretty good deal. They're getting a scholarship. They're not at the high levels, North Carolina's, the Dukes, that they're actually generating a lot of money, right? So I do feel like it is not too much to ask for them to simply walk through a line and recognize that after a game is over, we can let that go. I think that is setting a bad precedent to say, look, we understand that you can't even figure out how to come to terms to shake someone's hand after a basketball game. If that's the state of college athletics, then I think there's some true misprioritization. And I also think, look, to the extent that these guys do serve us, and I know it's, you know, some people like to kind of discount this potential that they should serve as role models, and a lot of people think that's hokey. I don't think it's a good message that. When the CYO kids watch the college kids not shaking hands, I think that sends a message. And it'll start with the college guys, and then the young kids will be like, you know what? They don't shake hands. Why do we have to shake hands?
I think it becomes incumbent on the coaches and the administrators of youth sports to state why that is different. Because it is different. Because youth sports are not all about winning. Youth sports need to be less about winning.
I agree with
you. Not Division I basketball. We don't need to stop keeping records in Division I basketball. It's about winning.
What if we said we're not keeping score? You know what, this year?
Then you're, congratulations, you're playing pickup. You're literally playing pickup.
What if they
very well-organized and well-funded pickup.
What if they did a social experiment and they just decided to treat Division I basketball like they treat, like, six-year-old basketball? Everyone gets equal amount of playing time. And there's no score. And you all have to say, read the pledge together before the game.
I don't think people are going to watch that. Although, I'd watch. I'd watch.
Because now you're just playing for stats. You're not playing to win anymore.
Right. because there is no winning. It's not possible. It's not possible. Right? Everybody remembers their youth sports league where at the end they tell their coach, like, who won? And they just say, we tied.
No, and but the worst part
like that is garbage. I was in that baseball game. It was like 14-2.
The worst part is there's always a kid who, like, it's Elliot, my kid, my 6-year-old is a math genius. He keeps track of everything, and the coach would be like, "All right, great game, guys." He'd be like, "We won 3-4, like 3-1." Like he knows every stat on every game, so he is fully cognizant of what goes on. But look, boy, I would love
that argument though that college sports if they aren't forced to come together and shake hands. And by the way, I fully believe that if you eliminate the every game we're going to line up and shake hands, I would venture to guess in 99% of the games, people are still going to go up to their opponent afterwards and shake hands.
I wouldn't. I think that would.
I don't think so.
Why not?
Because.
That's another reason it should be eliminated then. If it's not something you do on your own, you're only doing it because you're forced, then what's the point of that?
I happen to think as humans, we are one step away from anarchy at all times.
I agree.
And you're watching it, and you're watching it happen.
So now you're telling me you think all of the players don't want to engage in this.
I don't know, but I think if you de-emphasize that or denormalize that, it will go away.
Here's the other thing. It's not sportsmanship if you're forced to do it. That's not sportsmanship.
Oh, it has to come from the heart?
Yeah, it does. Intent matters.
No.
It's not sportsmanship to shake someone's hand and not mean it.
Let me tell you what. You go and work on that Habitat for Humanity house, right? It doesn't matter if you wanted to go or if your mom made you go. You're still working on that Habitat for Humanity house, and you're helping to build that house, and maybe you learn something out of it.
But no.
Well, you wouldn't know this because you've never done. You wouldn't do that. You'd be like, oh, my hands. I don't.
You know, I do think it would weed out kind of the most unsportsmanlike athletes of the world, so that, you know, when people wanted to go draft players.
Yes.
I mean, that stuff does matter to certain coaches and teams. It doesn't for others.
I don't see that.
But I think if we did leave it up to people, coaches and players would be able to really tell who the a-holes are, and that could be beneficial
for their team. We're really testing our language barriers
this brings me to one of my favorite lines of all time.
Do you think, wait, before you give me your line, do you think that in the war room, in these NBA war rooms, we're like, we like that guy. He's got great upside, long arms, great vertical, great scoring. You know, he didn't shake the Maryland team's hand. You know what? Leave him off the board.
Yeah, I do think it matters when that guy's up against another player who has long arms and a great vertical and can finish with his left hand, but did shake the Maryland team's hand. Yeah, I do
they
think
care
that
about attitude.
When you're comparing two things that are basically equal, you look for the stupidest thing to differentiate.
Why
do they measure the size of NFL prospects' hands?
Because
when A and B are exactly equal, you have to look for any little thing that might.
So now guys are going to shake hands for draft status.
No, but Adam makes a very good point. And one of my favorite lines ever is at a high level, sport should legislate itself. And at a high level, in NCAA Division I basketball is a high enough level. At a high level, the jerks are going to present themselves as jerks. It's going to be out in the open. Everybody's going to know it. The good people are still going to present themselves as good people. The sportsmen are going to present themselves as sportsmen. The people that are hyper-competitive are going to present themselves, same as the people that are less so. And you will have that knowledge and can do with it what you will and judge people accordingly.
I disagree. I don't believe in the anarchy system of self-governance. I think
you don't believe in the anarchy system of letting people do what they honestly believe.
Not in the framework of major athletics. No, I think...
So you believe line them up and force them to touch each other.
When you put it like that,
force him to shake hands.
I'm not sure I would do that.
I think after youth sports ends, like, that is where people stop.
Should we force them to
caring.
Hug each other?
No, but seriously.
Well, but this is the other thing about the handshake. Like, you ever notice the good players give each other the one arm embrace?
Oh, yes. The one-arm embrace. I love the one-arm, and you keep the arm in the middle there, and you do the...
You know why it's fun, too, is sometimes you see people you played with when you were younger, and you're like, oh, what's up? And, that's why it's fun. Yeah. But you're right. I would probably go find those people after, no matter what.
No, see, so, I actually...
See, Jeff has changed my mind.
You have a weak mind. You never get stuck in a room with Lord Vader, because he'd have you done in a
second. Did I ever tell you that Anna was my favorite intern?
Oh my gosh.
That's great.
Mike, where do you come down on sportsmanship in sports?
I agree with you, Jeff.
I love Mike. Did I ever tell you that Mike and Anna are my two favorite interns?
So I actually,
Well, you know what the best part is? Since you've never played sports at a level higher than, like, third grade tiddlywinks.
High school, like most people. So you played collegiate exercise. Don't act like you're Marty Glickman over there.
Oh, I was a relatively high Division I athletics
Ivy
level.
League.
That's right. The Ivies are some of the most established, successful sports programs in the country.
Thank Your you. Most impressive sporting achievement was winning the Cornell Dining Hall Classic.
And yes, yeah. Yes, I don't deny that. But I actually liked the forced embrace post sporting events.
To forced?
Because it was
you only liked it because you had to do it.
No, I actually
I think
felt
that's Stockholm syndrome.
I felt like that was it did humanize the opponent. It did. Because, yeah. Look, I understand in every sport, no matter what you think, like, we actually did hate Syracuse track. We actually did hate Penn track. Like, that was real for mm-hmm. us. Those were our two rivals. Yeah. And there was something about, after the meet, going and shaking everyone's hand that absolutely made them more human. And I believe strongly, both because that is an important thing for athletes to go through, all right, and because it sends the right tone to people who watch, I think it is important for that process to continue. I understand it's forced. They don't really like each other. They might. I mean, how many fights happen in handshakes?
More than none, and less than many.
I assume it to be very few because it's not like we hear about this a lot. There are a lot of fights during games,
but it happens.
A lot of things happen.
Yeah. But I'm not saying don't do it to prevent fights.
After a game.
And I'm also not saying don't do it, by the way. I'm saying don't force people to do it.
I think
stop
it depends
judging
on the
people
too.
On whether they do it.
I really think it depends on the sport. I mean, it always depends.
Well, it definitely
on the
depends
sport.
On the sport because it's a thing in hockey, it's a thing in basketball, it's not a thing in football, and it's not a thing in baseball. Like,
football,
it absolutely depends on the sport.
Football just take too long.
But again, in football, by the way, in football, it
hug.
Happens.
Yes, there's a lot of hugging.
Yeah, and there's no force. And you know what also happens in football? Some guys don't do it.
I like the football hugs.
Because they're wearing
very
pads.
Genuine. Yeah. Very genuine.
But, you know, you look, watch any high-level football game, none of that post-game stuff is mandated.
A lot of prayer after
the only thing that's really sort of become mandated is that the coaches shake hands. Yeah. And heaven forbid one coach doesn't shake the other coach's hand.
I like it when the quarterbacks start talking after.
Sure.
But see, I like that. I like it when they're talking afterwards.
Yeah. Me too.
I even
but
like
that's genuine.
Even though I'm not a prayer guy like that, and I actually almost appreciate the fact that they all get down and kneel together. Like, there's something that at least shows us that this is not the most important thing in the world to them. Like, but I actually love, and I know a lot of fans can't stand this, when a guy loses a really tough game, like a, you know, like let's say a wide receiver, that he goes and he hangs out with the cornerback that burned him all game, and they sit and they pal around, they talk. Like, I actually really like that. I like that visual. I think it shows us that, you know, it is just a kind of a game. And so I don't want them to get rid of anything that takes that away. And I know they can do it on their own.
Right. I like it, too, when it's not forced, like all of those examples you just described.
Maybe we should just not have to pay taxes, but we'll do it anyway.
How is that? What?
We don't have to pay taxes, but we'll do it anyway because it's the right thing to do.
That is the stupidest.
All right, let's go to break. Take it to break. We actually do have to go to break.
We're going
to
stay right here. We have plenty of time.
We got two breaks. And by the way, not for nothing, but our graphic now that you cannot see.
I'm turning and looking.
Says forced touching in sports.
Yes, it does. Yes, it does. It does say that. It does say that.
Can we now go to break?
And on that note. Let's all end this misery by taking a timeout here on Fox 1220 97.3 ESPN Radio. Do not forget to like The Classroom on Facebook. Do it by searching for ESPN The Classroom. Follow us on Twitter at ESPN_Classroom. Check out audio archives in the podcast section of iTunes. And sometimes watch a video stream when we're up in our new studio. There'll be a live stream link on our Twitter account. Sometimes you'll get video and audio. Sometimes just video. Sometimes just audio. It's like a crapshoot.
But I just don't understand. I don't understand, and Anna's still Adam Nuzzo right now. Nope, there
Nuzzo. It's pronounced Nuzzo,
know.
Nuzzo
is better. Nuzzo
I thought it was
better.
Nuzzo.
No, I would always say Nuzzo, and they'd be like, it's Nuzzo, and I'd be like, it should be Nuzzo.
Well, it's not.
But the Italian version was like Nuzzo.
Well, right. I mean, I'm sure his grandmother pronounces it completely differently than any of us, but isn't that always the case?
No, not always.
My grandma pronounces my name like with some crazy Lithuanian accent.
I bet you're like Mike Smith. Mike Smith.
Okay. Smythe. You know what? Why? Smythe. Why?
Might be Smythe. That's true. Yeah. That could be it. That could be it.
Anyway, you were about to rant about our technical difficulties as well.
Well, I'm not. I mean, my throat. Oh, by the way, just in case you just tuned in right now, I have a horrible cold. I'm actually probably doing long-term damage to my vocal cords. I'll probably never be able to tour with a band.
You're welcome.
So,
world.
So, I always knew I was the modern day Bruce Willis in Armageddon, saving the world from a horrible disaster.
So I'm doing this for you folks, for all of you America. I'm up here talking my way through this program. But I literally had no voice yesterday. I've just given it all, and I'll do it. And you know, tonight I have a big evening because I'm going to the Cornell Columbia basketball game down at Columbia.
Okay, sure.
That's a big night.
He's watched a lot of sports this week.
I know. I don't believe it.
Isn't it crazy?
A lot of sports.
Be a live Cornell Columbia basketball. It's going to be, you know.
He'll only go to an event if he has a box.
Well, there's no
boxes.
Or some sort of VIP
treatment. Let me
tell you what.
The entire Columbia gym is just one giant hot box. I mean, yeah. Calm down,
Anna. Not like that.
I didn't mean like that.
I'm not even going to go.
Like, what are we talking? Wooden bleachers still?
Oh
like,
yeah, definitely. That's what Ivy League gyms are.
Worst kind.
What's a ticket? What's a ticket for Cordell Columbia men's basketball?
Someone's buying one for me, so I don't. It's got to be about $12.
I would think that's about right. Yep.
But someone's buying one. But you know, I will say probably about $12. But you can have the inflated Ivy League New York City prices.
Oh sure.
Because everyone. Yeah, I mean, what Cornell Columbia alum's not going to be like 25? That's fine. Like they no one's going to care, right? So you're going to get a lot of that. But you know what? I came to realize the other day, and I don't want to give you the context. I actually like famous people more than I like rich people.
Oh my lord!
Here okay. we are again.
Which is true. I mean, not a lot of poor famous people. Not a lot.
Well, there are some.
Some, but not many. And I bet the ones that are poor and famous, you don't care for.
That's right. Like the Unabomber. He was
different. That's.
That's where
you
your mind
just
goes
really
first,
pick the Unabomber?
To a poor famous person. Yeah, like the Unabomber.
Like,
I don't
what?
Care for Kaczynski at all.
It's a hot take.
Hot take.
Struggler, yeah. Colin. Kaczynski bad. Where's that Chiron?
We should do a political show. Your hot political takes. The Unabomber, bad guy.
But yes, the point is true. There's nothing Keystroller loves more than famous people.
That's right. All right. I mean, the wealth is less, and it's really about fame. But I will say, to my credit, part of the reason I like famous people is because they're interesting. I like famous people who have led interesting lives. I don't want to hang out with a Kardashian.
Yes, you do.
No, I
you
really
would
don't.
Hang out with a Kardashian in a second.
I don't think I would.
Of course
they're
you would.
Kinda, yes, you would.
First of all, they are business. You cannot deny they are business people, and they are good business people. They can market themselves unlike anyone else
but
in this world.
They don't have an interesting story to tell.
Not unlike anyone else in this world. But I agree with that point.
That was a little bit too much superlative on that.
Talk about OJ.
We just like, elected a reality show president, so I think it's hard. It's hard to
also,
say.
Also, Taylor Swift does fine.
But she has some skills.
Yes. Very talented.
So I'm saying, so she actually does have, you know, kind of a talent that she's marketing, as opposed to the Kardashians, that potentially one might say doesn't.
Now, they can marry professional athletes like no one else
they
you've
are good
ever
at that.
Seen.
They are
really, really good at that.
They're very good at marrying
Speaking of sports.
Athletes.
They're probably the best in the world at marrying professional athletes.
Boy, whoa. I think that's true.
Is that true?
I think that's true.
Yeah.
I bet you there's people we don't even know about.
I don't know. We got to look at family statistics for other famous families that have married athletes.
That would be a very interesting... That would be a very interesting question.
His voice.
Which I know it's going right. who has married the most big four and major Olympic athletes?
Are we
world?
Talking family?
No. Which person? Which single individual?
Just remarried.
I mean,
right?
Marriage. I guess
it's got to be one of the Kardashians.
I don't know because didn't Kim only marry one? Like she never married Reggie Bush.
She married
Chris Humphries.
She married two.
Humphries.
Chris
oh,
Humphries.
No. Kanye's
and
an
Kanye's
athlete.
Kanye's not an athlete.
Kanye is certainly not
and same
an
thing,
athlete.
Like, you look at Chloe. Chloe didn't marry any of them.
Lamar.
They were married?
Oh, yes. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So she
was the first
one
to, like, actually have a legitimate marriage.
All right. So she got one. She got Lamar.
And that didn't end well.
No. Isn't she
crack.
She with a professional athlete now?
Yeah, she's with a Cavs player.
Oh, Tristan Thompson.
Thank
Tristan
you.
Thompson.
Well, here's the thing. But we all know this. Once you're in a circle, you're in a circle. This is why it's always good to date someone famous.
No doubt.
By the way, your girl, Scarlett Johansson, is down in Washington.
I'm sorry? Oh, Washington, D.C.?
She's in the, speaking at the march.
I should hop in the Amtrak.
I thought Jeff had an actual girl.
I should hop in the Amtrak.
No, Jeff's girl is Scarlett Johansson.
I thought, when you said your girl, I was like, wait, Jeff has a girl?
Wouldn't you like to know about that?
You know what? Dr. Rogers won't tell us anything about his. I got to know. A
little inside baseball here, but yes.
Sorry, yeah.
But yes.
Shout out to Ryan Rogers.
Yes, but I'm sure if and when Jeff ever establishes an adult relationship, he'll come and talk about it. I don't see that ever happening. Because Jeff does not...
An adult relationship?
Jeff doesn't
believe
in those kinds of relationships.
You know what else?
I don't believe it. I mean, I believe in them. They exist.
It's not like global warming.
Well, global warming is a myth perpetuated by the Chinese.
To be fair, one has a great chance of ruining lives, and the other is making for some nice temperate climate in the winter.
So, you know who else has had a hard time maintaining an adult relationship? Johnny Manziel.
Great segue.
Award-winning segue.
Because Johnny Manziel this week has announced that he is sober, that he got himself sober, and that he wants another chance in the NFL.
Right. We're going to have to walk a fine line here between marginalizing that.
I'm not marginalizing anything. That's what Johnny Manziel said.
Yeah, he's no longer hashtag lost in the sauce.
Johnny Manziel,
which is, by the way, just in case you want, that's our new restaurant concept.
Johnny Manziel.
We got two concepts here. One is anything in a helmet.
Sauces.
Anything in a helmet. And it's lost in the sauce.
These could be fused together.
Yeah, I don't see why they can't.
Anything in a helmet in the sauce.
It could be like a Kentucky hut when the Kentucky Fried Chicken and the Pizza Hut and the Taco Bell are all under one roof. It could be like that.
Well, because anything in a helmet is you can literally get anything put in a helmet.
Right.
And lost in the sauce is where you pick your protein or your carb, and then you pick your sauce.
Right.
And so, but what if that is all served in a helmet?
It could be. That's what I'm saying. These concepts can blend. They blend seamlessly.
Because one's really just a vessel, and the other. I think anything lost in the sauce is a great idea for a restaurant. I'm not kidding.
Because let me tell you what makes food better. Drowning it in sauce.
But it's not that the food's lost.
Always,
in sauce.
I've been eating a nice bowl of pasta and thought, "Oh, I wish this was smothered in Alfredo."
look at the graphic on the screen.
it's a helmet nacho. We got a helmet nacho. That's a helmet nacho.
But no, it's not that the food's lost in the sauce. It's that you're lost in the sauce.
Yeah, I get it. I get it. I also like that you're so excited about this concept, you turned into a 14-year-old girl there for a second.
Oh, my God. I would love that restaurant. I would love to be able to walk in and be like, you know what? I'm going to get this. You wouldn't like it for me because I won't eat any meat, and I think you think this has to be predicated on meat. But
what do you sauce that isn't meat? Apples and caramel? Like what vegetables are you lathering in sauce?
You could do all kinds of, like a tempura kind of vegetable that you put sauce on.
Yeah.
So you're going to fry some zucchini and put what on it?
Like a sweet and sour?
Ew.
Ew.
What?
Congratulations, you just killed the restaurant. Literally, first thing you put on the menu, everybody go, ew.
Would you like a soy? A kind of soy?
Yeah, that's more along the line. Yeah.
I like sweet and sour.
Like some kind of... I think you're definitely on the right track with the whole Chinese food concept.
Also, by the way, your vegetarian option is pasta.
I know you have pasta, but you can also do like a fried tofu.
Yeah, but why?
Because it's delicious.
No, it isn't.
Because it's delicious.
No, it isn't. Anna is vomiting into the microphone at the mere mention of tofu.
It's delicious. I'm going to bring in some fried tofu, and you're all
going to eat it. It's not delicious.
Again,
you know, it's
from the South, so guess what? Anything fried, you'll probably eat.
You could have a breakfast thing. You could put like eggs in there.
Sure.
And put sauce on
that. Sure, you could.
You could do everything.
Yeah.
You could do two proteins.
It'd also be great. Meat.
So what would you do, like a sausage and a steak?
No. I'd do one meat and a sauce.
If you had to get one helmet bowl and you had one protein and one sauce, what would be your pick?
One protein and one sauce.
Or two proteins. Two proteins and a sauce.
Probably a meatball. And because that's three different meats if it's done right.
True. Ooh, and, that's a good point.
That's a really good answer, actually.
So I think I'd go with a meatball.
And then... And then you're just doing an Italian thing. You're just getting a marinara, right?
No, I think you can do lots of creative sauces.
What would you do in the meatball?
I don't know. I mean, I feel like you have a lot of choices. I feel like there's not a lot of bad sauces in that instance.
On the meatball?
Yeah. I think meatballs always pairs well with tomato something.
That's
sure. I mean, that's the classic. But again, the classics are classic for a reason.
All right.
Well, what else? Could you put a cheese sauce on it?
I think you could put a cheese sauce on it. I do.
What kind I would of do
cheese?
Bacon wrapped
You know
steak.
What? Yeah, you could do a cheese sauce
yeah.
on it.
Yeah.
Put bacon in
I
there.
I think the world is your oyster.
But that's the other thing. So Lost in the Sauce also could have toppings. You could be a topping bar for it.
Well, of course, it would have yeah. to be. It's the whole point. It's like a Chipotle bowl. You get to add in whatever you want.
But there'd be the sauce, and then there'd be the toppings, like
oh,
the add-ons.
Oh, right. You want
your jalapenos,
right.
your bacon.
It's like a Chipotle setup. You go and you pick your meat, you pick your sauce, and then you pick your add-ons, then you get to the end, and the guacamole is extra.
That's exactly how. So that's the concept for Lost in the Sauce. You walk in, you grab a helmet. And you give them, and then you're like, I'll take these two meats, or this protein, this carb. And then you walk to the sauce bar, and you're like, I'll take that sauce, maybe a second sauce. And then you walk to the toppings bar.
There is literally.
And then they weigh it.
This is true. There is restaurant space directly across the street from Marist College available right now.
Boy, I don't know if I have in my budget to get the rent. It's hard for me to explain this, but I'll work with a business school.
I mean, do you believe in the concept?
I believe.
This is the American dream right here. This is also how we get on Shark Tank with future Canadian Prime Minister Kevin O'Leary. If you didn't notice this week, Shark Tank star Kevin O'Leary is going to run against Justin Trudeau for Prime Minister
That's
of Canada.
Tough, because on the one hand, everyone loves Justin Trudeau.
Yeah.
He's dreamy.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
On the other hand, we're talking about Shark Tank now. So that's going to be a tough one. That's going to be a tough one.
Let's get into Johnny Manziel sure. real quick. Johnny Manziel talking to Ed Werder of ESPN this week. Our colleague, Ed Werder. Johnny Manziel said that he does not want to squander his athletic career because of partying. He said that he got sick of partying. He got sick of drinking. He woke up one day, said that he didn't really like himself, and realized
I know that feeling.
That if he turned that if he turned his life around, he could help himself and help others.
Good enough.
He said that he loves football.
People like me.
And that when he lost football, yeah. you know, when he wasn't able to play football this year because of bad decisions that he made, he realized how much he missed it. And he wants it back. He got himself sober. No professional help. Johnny Manziel claims
Which
that he
I,
is
I know,
sober.
Which I have to believe is very, very tough.
I would think so. Yeah.
For a guy who's lived that life for so long. Whose dad, not that long ago, said, if someone doesn't intervene, he's going to die.
And now he says he wants another chance. He's turning his life around, which I'm going to take him at his word. I don't know the man. I'm going to take him at his word and be happy about that. And honestly, I hope he does get another chance.
Now, I mean, there are some questions still with him. Domestic violence charge that I think
I think that was just resolved. I think that's why he made this public statement. Manziel last month reached an agreement with the Dallas District Attorney's Office to have domestic violence charges dropped if he meets certain conditions throughout the year.
So maybe the charges aren't still there, but certainly the allegations kind of stick.
The
idea that yes. might be who he is down deep.
Yes.
And without some real serious rehabilitation, I think people will still, take note of that. And there will also then be the question of, do you deserve a second chance just because you say you want one? And I think that's the larger question here is, he has let a lot of people down for a long time, right? And some of that stems from the drinking. Some of that stems from what seemed like a sense of entitlement. So I think there is going to be the question of whether this is just him saying that and probably meaning it because he wants it or because he's actually had a real change.
Talk is cheap, no doubt. Talk is cheap. But the NFL is a league of second chances.
Yep.
The only time in the NFL you apparently do not get a second chance is if there's a video of you doing whatever it is you did to get knocked out of the league. Now, if there's video evidence, you don't usually get another chance.
No. Now, in college ball, it's still fine.
apparently, yes. Sparing the video evidence, almost everybody in the NFL gets another chance.
Yeah.
If you're talented.
If you're good.
But this is like his fifth chance. Do you remember all of the times that he said he's done, he's sober, he's done partying? Like, I'm just going to...
But I mean, look, the domestic violence charges serious. Everything else was largely a performance issue.
Sure.
It was a performance issue.
Yeah, the NFL could, they could care less. I mean, look, professional sports is your job.
Yeah.
And your employer doesn't care what you do when you're not at work. They only care what you do when you're at work.
Now, if you get a DUI, that's one thing. But if it's simply allegations that you drink too much, I don't think they like that. But that is not inherently cause for dismissal.
Johnny Manziel's number one problem
look at
with
Gronk,
Cleveland.
By the way, Gronk
but he also isn't a great football player.
Yeah, but that's the
problem.
That's
Johnny Manziel's number one problem. He might be good enough to be on a roster. I mean, whether he's going to be the next Tom Brady or not, and Chip Price sailed.
I think he is good enough to be on a roster.
I probably agree. Johnny Manziel's biggest NFL-related problem was that he stopped showing up.
Yes.
It wasn't what he was doing at night. It was that he blew off team meetings.
Yes. And that is, the NFL is
it is a team of league of protocol.
Right.
I mean, you show up at meetings, you do the job. There
you
are
don't
things,
Snapchat in the locker room.
But there are things that happen in the NFL. Unlike, you know, I think there's this concept that it's a bunch of privilege. It's not. The coaches want you there. You're at meetings. You don't go to meetings, and you get cut because there are 1,000 other guys who can take your spot.
And also, you know, again, don't know Johnny Manziel personally. But
surprises me.
But alcoholism is a real disease.
Sure.
And for some people, it's very, very difficult to stop.
I also think there was,
and also for some people, it takes more than one try to stop.
I also think that it was hard to separate the kind of the specter of alcoholism from the overarching kind of ethos of him being overprivileged.
Sure, money Manziel.
And so that was the thing that became very confusing with Manziel. I don't think people really took the alcoholism very seriously. They saw that as kind of a larger kind of who he is as a person, the guy who parties, who's privileged, who's never been told no in his life.
It goes back to perception. If your perception of Johnny Manziel is, oh, here's a jerk that we don't like, you know, that's how you view his alcoholism. And if Johnny Manziel is a person who has a wonderful reputation, it's viewed as, oh, man, I hope we can get this guy some help.
And there have been guys in the league who have had alcohol problems, in most leagues, who've had alcohol problems.
And drug problems and painkillers, and the list goes on and on.
And I think almost universally, both the league as well as the players and usually the fans rally behind that athlete because they want him to get clean and come back. Johnny Manziel, I don't think, was ever treated seriously in that regard because I think they saw Johnny Manziel as just a party frat boy who got everything he wanted and drove around a BMW. They saw him very differently. Much of that was his own doing. And so whether or not he will be embraced by the fans at this point, I don't know.
Yeah, but he also doesn't need to be embraced.
He doesn't need to
be
embraced.
And you want to know how he'll be embraced by the fans? Winning.
If he gets on a team, and hopefully that would not be in Cleveland, because that would make it easier. So,
which would actually be probably the best place for him right now in terms of a football opportunity.
Sure.
There is playing time available,
and not that much partying to do. So, but I will also say this: there's a spring football league. If you paid, I texted
you. Texted me
this.
Yes.
Have you seen anything about this?
Nothing. I was busy last night. We had a basketball game.
You didn't get home from the game?
Yeah, and then I went to sleep.
No, he didn't get home, but he's here now.
Could have looked it up.
But that's why you're here, to tell us all about it.
Well, so there is a former NFL executive is starting a spring football operation.
Yeah, good luck.
that is just, it's going to be almost more like we see spring football. I like how now on the video stream, they put a post of an article. From NBC, not ESPN.
Yeah, it's Pro Football Talk. That's true, from NBC. Yep, there it is. And Johnny Manziel.
And by the way.
Wow, Ray Rice and Vince Young?
Yeah. So this league, though, that's not primarily who this league is for. This league is literally being set up like spring football in college. They're basically setting this up so NFL GMs can get a look at guys.
Yeah.
And this is like, it's a second chance league. It's
sure.
Like a D-League kind of situation. Yeah. It's not being set up really for the fans. It's being set up for
sure.
Which is why I think they have a shot. Because if it's something that's being done for the operation of the NFL, it'll work.
It's a showcase.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so if it's being set up to be, you know, a competitor, it'll never work. It's mainly for guys in their 20s. Guys that were...
And Vince Young.
But they said they will give some of the older guys who have had some issues...
Yeah, Vince Young. It's like this whole thing is created for Vince Young. Everything you're saying applies only to Vince Young. He's everything. He's the poster child of this league.
I said most of the guys are guys in their 20s who just want another shot to play. Except
for Vince Young, who doesn't know when to let go.
All right, we have to go to break.
Just to wrap it up, I'm all for Johnny Manziel getting another chance.
Yeah, I am too, if he can play. I think he can play. I think he's a good football player.
I think the jury's out, but I mean, why not give him a shot?
All right, the quarterback is the scarcest commodity in the NFL. It's important to have multiple decent ones, and it's so easy to miss on these guys that there's no reason. If you have a guy that might potentially have talent, no reason you wouldn't want him in the league.
Grades of the Week is next. Stay tuned. Fox 1220, 97.3 ESPN Radio. So normally when we come back from break, last segment of the show, we try to keep it loose, banter a little bit for time, but we've got Grades of the Week coming up, and the audio intro for this takes like 4.5 minutes.
It
so
does
let's,
not.
Let's
no.
get right to
yeah.
Grades of the Week. Buckle up.
The it's about time.
Not even halfway there.
Oh,
Ashley Judd at the rally in Washington.
She just spoke.
No, watch
it's a
know.
Little childish and stupid, but then so is
Scarlett Johansson earlier.
Kind of off the Scarlett Johansson. I mean, still great, but I've moved on. She's married.
You're either an A or an
L. Let it go.
I tip my cap.
Or B.
Beaten by a better man, a Frenchman.
Jack Nicklaus is 77 today.
Jack Nicklaus, like the golfer?
Yeah.
Okay. I like how we just have a conversation over that intro. Graves of the week, let's begin. In the NFC Championship game, the Green Bay Packers taking on the Atlanta Falcons. A lot on the line, obviously, for fans of both teams, but also for one gambler. Jonathan Schechter tweeted out this week a betting ticket. There has been one bettor who has taken the Green Bay Packers in every single game since Aaron Rodgers said, I think we can run the table, and they've won every game since, and one bettor. Put $300 on Green Bay to win the next game. One, double down.
Double down.
One, double down. One, double down.
What book is he at?
I don't know. now his initial $300 bet is worth $28,213.
So you got a casino that's really exposed right now.
And he put $228,000.
You say $228,000?
No. $28,213 right. On the NFC Championship game. He's letting it ride, Keith Strudler. Grade that bet.
This is like one of those game shows, right? What is that, Deal or No Deal?
Yeah, it's like Let It Ride.
Is that a show?
Yeah.
Here's my new concept. We do a game show. It's called Let It Ride. Drowning in Sauce. Is that what we're calling this thing?
Lost in the Sauce.
Lost in the sauce.
Hashtag Lost
Drowning
in the Sauce.
Drowning in Sauce.
Sounds gross.
I'm going to need a grade on the bet here because we got another grade you're going to like.
All right, I'll give that a... What are we talking about?
He has a $300 bet that's now worth $28,000.
Is he independently wealthy?
I have no idea.
Then I give it an F. Take that money and run.
Okay. This one you're going to like. Buckle up. A video store has opened in Los Angeles that only carries copies of Jerry Maguire. The store opened January 13th as part of an art project called Everything is Terrible. The 1996.
By the way, that it might be the actual name of our restaurant.
Yeah.
Everything is Terrible. So Lost in the Sauce.
So Jerry Maguire, starring Tom Cruise, Cuba Gooding Jr., Renee Zellweger, came out in 1996. And this art collective got together 14,000 VHS copies, put them in a room designed to look like a video rental store from days past. Now, here's the kicker. None of the tapes are available for rent or purchase.
So can you use them there?
I don't know. I don't think so.
Is there like a library?
I don't think so. The eventual goal of these Jerry Maguire tapes that have been collected after the art installation closes is to take them to the desert and build a pyramid of Jerry Maguire tapes. You can learn more about the project at the website jerrymaguirepyramid.com.
I'm going to say this seriously. We will have that artist on next week.
I hope we do.
We are getting that person on the air. It's an A+. Well, going to be a lot of talk about recycling in the next few years. This is what, give it a second life. That Jerry Maguire tape was put on this earth for a reason.
To build a pyramid in the desert.
Look.
Over 14,000 Jerry Maguire VHS tapes.
The Egyptians did it. We can do it.
Again, jerrymaguirepyramid.com.
Could you imagine?
Everything
is terrible. Secret Garden is like my favorite Bruce Springsteen song.
Thousands of years from now, if they're like, those are the Egyptian pyramids.
I'm just going to say.
Here's the Jerry Maguire.
It becomes one of the wonders of the world. It's like the Stonehenge of 2,000 years from now. Everybody's like, what is this?
Look at that thing.
There it is, the Jerry Maguire Pyramid.
We're getting them on.
It's all the time we got in the classroom this morning. I want to thank Bobby Marks, front office insider from Yahoo Sports, The Vertical, for coming on. Also, all the interns here at the Marist College Center for Sports Communication, Anna Grizulis, Mike Wallace, helping us produce the show in studio. For Dr. Keith Strudler, I'm Jeff Brault. Thanks for hanging out. We're with you next week, 10 a.m. to noon, for another smart look
at sports. We're going to have the live stream working.
Maybe.
No promises.
Let's not write checks we can't cash.
You don't want to get lost in the sauce.
We'll try our best, though.
And try our new concept restaurant, Lost in the Sauce. Any meat, any carb, in a helmet, with any sauce you want.
What could go wrong? Have any health remedies for Keith Stradler? Tweet at us.
Yeah.
At ESPN_classroom. Otherwise, we'll see you next week. Class is dismissed.